Good morning. I'm your host, Andy Bates. It is Friday, May 1st, 7:32 Central Time. Joining us by phone this morning, Dr. Jack Fiennes, clinical counseling and clinical psychologist. Good morning, Dr. Fiennes.
I'm a clinical counselor. Are you sure?
Well, my notes here say that you're with Clinical Counseling LTD. Is that right?
I was a plumber yesterday, but I guess I'll change to something else. I like changing around appointments.
You're a clinical psychologist, though, right?
That's correct. Hey. Yeah, this is May Day, right? Isn't that right? May 1, something like that?
It is May 1st. When did May sneak upon us? I was just looking at my notes, and I'm not quite ready for May.
been too cool in April and March. I think that, I'm hoping we'll get an 80-degree day or something today. But, this is when all the kids are supposed to go put flowers on everybody's porch and all that kind of stuff.
I didn't have any flowers on my porch this morning.
I know. I think kids are afraid to do that anymore. Probably get thrown off the front porch by people. But that's what my kids used to do. That they used to go around the neighborhood putting flowers and stuff on everybody's porch. They used to get a kick out of that, you know. But I think they got preached to or something. They got some kind of deal out of it. But they don't do that too much anymore. The generations have changed, I guess. You know, the world's changed. So. How is it down in St. Louis? Is it warm down at 80 degrees yet?
Not quite 80 yet. Still around the upper 40s right now, but we're headed for some 70s today, I think.
Good, good, good. I like the number 70s. Upper 40s sounds like October, not May.
How are you, Dr. Fiennes?
I'm doing fine. So what are we talking about today?
Well, a question. The comparing multi-generational households to single-generation households is a topic, actually, we may cover it more in depth on faith and family in the future, but what are some of the advantages, maybe disadvantages, of having multiple generations in a household? For example, grandparents, parents, and children all living in one household.
Well, that actually has become quite regular of late because of two sociological, sociocultural trends. First of all, people are living older, so the older generation is hanging around a lot more. I mean, maybe it's 20 years ago, people were dying a lot younger. But now, Aunt Edna's 80 and she's still around, and et cetera, and then grandma's hanging around a lot longer. And it's hard for them to live alone on their own. They can't can't afford some of the senior living because of the expenses. On the other hand, sometimes on the other perspective, you got children who they get out, maybe go to college or try to get jobs, et cetera, and there's no jobs available. They don't earn enough money at their jobs to get live alone. So what happens is you get this sandwich situation where the family, which is the mom and dad, I've got the older generation still there and taking care of them. And then their kids, or at least some of them, are coming back without jobs from college, mm-hmm. and or they have gotten married and somebody got divorced. And so you have a single child coming back with maybe the grandkids or whatever. So you have these families that are, what we used to call extended families. We call it multi-generational, but they have these extended families. Now, obviously, the one downside is space because you end up with basically the same domicile with more people and maybe some economic variables because you've got to feed and fund these extra people that are there. But the upside, and I have no problem with the upside of this, and I know a lot of people talking about this being multi-generational or extended families being a problem. I don't see it as a problem. In fact, I sort of welcome it. For hundreds of years, probably, maybe more than that, hundreds of years, our society and other societies lived multi-generationally. I mean, there was no problem in having the grandparents or great uncle or whatever in the house, and the kids took a long time to leave, it was a great, great learning experience. You learned the value system, you learned history, you learned past, you learned culture. You learned a lot of things from the various generations that an older people got to know new perspectives and new ideas that they didn't have before. And it was a giant, I hate to use this term, but here it comes, with a giant melting pot of values and ideas and family culture that we didn't have, for a while there when this wasn't going on. And I'm going to use a number just to be safe about, let's say 1960 to about 1990, 30 years in there. You know, the grandma and grandpa were in someplace else, maybe dying out, and the kids were someplace else, two or three, four or five states away, and the mom and dad were sitting in the middle, and nobody knew each other. They got together at Christmas, they got together at Easter, maybe, mm-hmm. And then when they did get together, they got in big, huge fights because they didn't understand each other. And so then they, in fact, there was a very good show on bring up a city named Baltimore this of the 1950s. And it was about a family that was all very close and tight together, a very extended family all the way from the 1920s, 1950s. And by 1960, they all went different places. And the family fell apart because they didn't understand each other. There's a downside to it, but I don't fear it at all. It's not, and the one thing is a lot of people feel shame or some kind of downside feeling, guilt, if, the family has to stay together because the kid doesn't have a job or somebody got divorced or grandma and grandpa in the house or Aunt Edmund's in the house. So I see it as an opportunity, not a guilt situation. I don't see it as a situation, it's a tremendous way from the standpoint of KFUO, and, we just got done with Sherathon. And I talked on Sherathon about KFUO being an alternative mindset, an alternative way of looking at things, a positive alternative. The alternative on a Christian standpoint is that the generations can share the message of Christ deeply and they can listen to each other talk about it because, quite frankly, grandma and grandpa's viewpoint on it and mom and dad's viewpoint on it, the kids' viewpoint on it could be slightly different perspectives, but they all can feed into each other and they can have a much stronger orientation, broad-based but much stronger orientation toward Christianity. They're going to church and the religious values that they want to maintain. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to talk to grandma and grandpa and Aunt Edna if they're in the same house or junior, the grandkids or great-grandkids if they're right there with you rather than, in Minnesota or wherever they go, Newark, New Jersey.
A few decades back, this wasn't that uncommon. Multigenerational households was not that uncommon in North America. It still is fairly common in other cultures, especially in Asia, and I'm not sure what other cultures around the world, but I know many Asian cultures, it's still pretty common, isn't it?
Oh, it's common every place. Yeah, I mean, we're the oddball. We're the ones that created the nuclear family over here. I've got cousins in Italy. When you go to visit in Italy, they have what they call the compound. It's not the house, the compound. And it's a group of five or six houses together, even sometimes linked together structurally, and you got everybody in there, okay? I got 88-year-old Giuseppe sitting next to 40-year-old this one, and blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, it's very common. You see, we saw that in France this year over there. We saw it in England. It's very, very common. In the United States, yeah, Asia's got them, and if you go to a place like Africa, it's all over the place. The point is, we're the only nation that's invented this nuclear family, and we think, because of how we are in the United States, that it's perfectly normal to have grandma and grandpa way out in the back 40 and have the kids way in the front 40 somewhere, 40 states over, and then we're real normal when we got mom and dad sitting at home with a dog, Well, that sometimes gets lonely, too, because mom and dad and the dog can't talk with each other sometimes. So I think it's very common. I did a lot of cross-cultural research, and some of the very problems we have with value systems and some of the very problems we have with conflicts, in our country come directly from this nuclear family thing where we created suburbia and everybody got a car and everybody went off to college and everybody had this great dream and the thing collapsed on itself and we're right back to where it was, in 1900, So, yeah, it's very... very common elsewhere. And I mean, it probably wasn't unknown back in the days of Martin Luther in the 1500s where, you could have somebody talk about the Bible and talk about their life and talk about the new things going on, Gutenberg Press or whatever, and they were actually in town to listen to it. You actually read Luther's, some of his table talks, and the father of the family should do this, and mm-hmm. Sort of directing people how to run the thing, And he's not talking as if he's talking to the father of the family, talking to his wife, just one other person. He's talking to everybody, So I'm sort of one of those weird ducks, but I think multi-generational situations are great, I don't think if it happens because you got older people that can't live alone, and you got younger people that have either can't find a job, or, for that matter, a divorce. It's a great way to unite and get a good value system. And what better way for a young child to come home from college, can't find a job, and all miserable and dismal and that kind of thing, and he's sitting next to his great-grandparent who said, well, you should have seen what it was like in the Great Depression. We didn't have jobs either, or after World War II, or after this situation. They can share their life experiences that are much more meaningful than just reading it in a book or watching the National Geographic Channel.
There certainly are advantages to multi-generational households as well, right? The grandchildren have the opportunity to interact with grandparents, that alone can have some benefits, both for the grandchildren and for the grandparents.
Yes, for everybody. Now, of course, there's downsides. I mean, we all got to get along, and you got to make sure that there's enough food, and you got to make sure somebody does the vacuuming and that kind of thing. But, you know, the funny thing is, what I find out is that if you get in those kind of situations, the complaining goes on. If it does, you know, let's say everybody sort of collects some spring or some fall when people are getting out of school or getting divorced or the older people are moving in. You know, the German term, the angst or the Sturm und Drang of it all, that lasts maybe for a few months. That lasts maybe just a little while. But, you know, pretty soon they all sort of get used to each other. They all know each other anyway. I mean, you know, honestly, they all came from each other. And, you know, so generally speaking, there is some degree of struggle. And, of course, once they give up the notion that they're doing something wrong because they're not the nuclear family, then, quite frankly, you know, it tends to work out. There can be economic variables, can be frustration variables, but the downsides can far be underneath the good sides of this thing. I mean, if you dwell on it, and you know, are a mope, and you say, oh well, you know, we're not the nuclear family, or the nest egg is a and it's not empty, we're all not empty nesters anymore, and you go around complaining, then, yeah, of course, you could have a negative attitude. But I think you got to develop a positive attitude and say, well, we're back to the way it was in 1880, and quite frankly, it was very much that way in 1880 in the United States. And, you know, quite frankly, we all survived. The United States survived quite well back in 1880.
There certainly were some advantages, and we'll talk more about some of those advantages here in just a moment. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO. We'll continue our conversation with Dr. Jack Vyans in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson with an invitation for you to join me over the weekday noon hour for Moments of Assurance, your lunchtime spiritual recipe. You'll enjoy encouraging scriptures, a bit of Bible history and trivia, news items, humor, the kids' corner, and more, all mixed in with faith-strengthening sacred music, a blend just right for your midday hour. So join me, won't you? That's Moments of Assurance over the weekday noontime hour here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Worldwide KFUO has been listener-supported for more than 90 years, teaching the good news of Jesus upon the cross and witnessing to the world on God's mercy. We are on AM 850 in St. Louis and online at kfuo.org, where you will find our Give Now button. It's easy, safe, and secure to give to the Christ-centered broadcast ministry of Worldwide KFUO. You'll find us online at kfuo.org.
Reverend Dr. Matthew C. Harrison of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod recently said these words regarding the importance of the work of Concordia Historical Institute.
When you forget your past, you forget the gospel. You become locked into your own little part of time. As you study the past and know the past and know what happened in the past, you see God at work. And you see Christ.
Discover your Lutheran history at ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org.
Following Jesus is summed up in loving people as you've been loved by God. That's a meaningful life in action. When God grafts us into His Son, the vine, when He makes us part of Jesus' life-giving power, things change. That's a meaningful life at God's disposal right where you are today.
Pastor Gregory Seltz, this week on The Lutheran Hour.
Sundays at 12:30 and 5 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO. We're talking with Dr. Jack Fiennes, clinical psychologist, about multi-generational households. And Jack, before we went to break, we were talking about some of the advantages and some of the challenges of living in a multi-generational household. There certainly are some things that have led up to the changes in North American culture when it comes to households. You mentioned that we're again, pioneers of the nuclear family household, and just having one generation living in a household here in North America doesn't seem to be that as common in other cultures. Why do you think we made that move to just one generation living in a household?
Well, that was my friend. That was I can tell you that because my mom and dad and others around their generation told me all that back in the mid to late 1950s. Because they all had served, many of the people, I would say our generation parents who are now in the 90s, many of those people were in the war and they were in the Great Depression. And the great hope of the people coming back was that they could get themselves their GI Bill college education, which many of them did, get themselves established with their own job, get away from the past with the Depression, which they'd gone through the war, and basically reward themselves with their own life, okay? Reward themselves with the American dream. And so, and there's nothing wrong with that. And then you had people like, there's all manner of various builders out there, but they built these ranch houses that were all available all over the place, subdivisions, and it fit hand in glove. And businesses were growing out there, and new cars were coming out, a lot of cars. Everybody's got their own car, station wagon, and Frank Lloyd Wright actually was the guy, the very famous architect, was the guy that invented the ranch house, the one-level house. And so, and there it went. And so, and there were schools developing all over the place. The Lutheran Church itself, if you study the history of the Lutheran Church, many of our schools, Christ Lutheran Salt Lake, Our Savior's Lutheran Springfield, were all getting developed during that time when these subdivisions were growing. So there was an attitudinal change. A value system changed because the younger generation of that time, the moms and dads, my mom and dad, many moms and dads, well, you know, it's time for us to do our own thing. We'll be the new pioneers. We'll stake our new claim to fame, and we're back from the war. We got our jobs. We're going to build our house, and that's where the word nuclear family came in. They wouldn't be, if quite frankly, it's funny how they use the word nuclear, because nuclear was the word of the day because they invented nuclear weapons, so everything became nuclear, you know, and so off they went. And then they left Aunt Edna and Grandma behind, and the kids were growing up, and the kids were instilled with the same value system. Well, go out to your college education, get your degree, and you'll get a great job, and you'll be fine, you know. Then it collapsed in starting about 1990s, you know. The people fell out of jobs, kids couldn't get work after college, and it just got worse in the millennial time. So it was a great value system of that post-war generation or that pre-committed war generation and the construction boom were the ones that created this model. And I'm not saying the model is bad. I'm just saying that was the model. But the model, the logistical system of the nation, the economy and the ability to get jobs and older people getting sick and old, we couldn't support it. You know, that's actually there's another downside that you had to bring up is that the generation is dying now, right? Like both my mom and dad lived late. My mom was 95 or 98 when she died. But when she had to move in, she was almost ashamed to move in because her viewpoint was the goal of her generation was not to move back in with the kids, but to live independently, to still live independently and then as long as possible. And that's actually why sometimes with people, when they get older, you have to put them in a senior living center, like we have a Concordia system here, the Lutheran Social Services, they don't like to do it initially because they think that's giving up their value system and giving up their identity. And we run into that quite a little bit, but we got to tell them that the value system, that the viewpoint that was created by us in our culture in a time period that fit that time period. That time period was 1948 to about 1998, and it's not there anymore. It may come back, but it's not in it anymore now. But I quite frankly sort of enjoy it. I've got all my grandkids that are not living here, but I see them all the time. A couple of great grandkids floating around. So it's a blast. I get to find out all about the you know, the Avengers and all that kind of jazz, you know. They chased me down the hill being Iron Man, but I can't come back up the hill once I get down there. So, but it's a different. We've got to expand our view and ask the question: how did this happen? And it happened because we made it happen because of the value system. And like I referred to that movie. It's an old movie about Baltimore. I think the name is Avalon, and it traces a family, and it shows us exactly that in the 1950s. Those kids were born, oh, we're going to go out and we live the war. We're going to start our new appliance store. We're going to start our own life. And off they went. And they didn't. By the time they got out of the suburb, they forgot about their value system completely. Forgot about the family meetings. Forgot about church. Forgot about everything. And then it fell back on itself later.
So this move to more multi-generational households is happening now, kind of out of more so out of a necessity, as you mentioned yes. earlier. A lot of this generation of college grads who are coming out of college with education debt, and, you know, debt, yes. Student loans, and debt from college, and secondly, not also not being able to find the jobs that would pay off that student debt. The jobs that are available right now are not necessarily jobs that require a college degree or at least not a bachelor's. And many of them coming out of college with college debt because they've gone on to a master's degree because they've been told for since preschool that they have to have not only a bachelor's degree, but if they want a really good job, if they really want to get somewhere in life, they also have to have a master's degree or higher. And so they're coming out of college with these degrees, which are certainly valuable. We probably have the most educated generation we've had in history. However, we also have probably the most indebted generation in history, I bet, in Americans when it comes to education loans. And so they're finding themselves in this awkward predicament. The jobs that they can find, if they find a job, doesn't require that college degree. And so in the parts of the country where the cost of living is higher, what they're finding is they're living at home well into their 30s, if not later, living in mom and dad's home in mom and dad's basement or wherever, living in multi-generational households. Grandma and grandpa, as they get older, maybe move in as well because they need someone to take care of them. And so we end up with these sandwich generations as well.
And you got to see it as an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Don't see it as a disaster. See it as a challenge. See it as an opportunity. By the way, we created that situation of the debt ourselves. Our own culture did it. In 1978, the United States government took over the funding college with Sally Mae and all these companies that mm-hmm. they had, Navient now, and they took it away from the banks. The banks at one point would not loan people that kind of money because college wasn't seen as just some kind of a commodity or an investment. And when they did that, though, they made the loans very, very cheap, like 2%, 1%, 3%, the government did. So everybody was getting any loan they wanted for any course they wanted. So they go to the colleges, and what did the colleges do when they saw that free money? They raised their rates. So when I went to college in 1970, it was a couple grand a year. Now it's $20,000. Why? Because we didn't have the ability of our own money to go to college. But my generation or my kids' generation, oh, you want $20,000 to go? We got it for you. Don't worry, only 2% interest. What happened is that as the money became free and available, the colleges said, well, what do you mean? You know, we can charge a lot of money for our services. And guess what? At the end game, you got $100,000 debt and a BA degree or MA degree and nothing, you know? But that's totally, again, a total, it's designed, it happened by our own stupid mistakes, the way we fund this situation, you know? But quite frankly, it's a little silly because I've been in university faculties, and the universities, most of the major universities in the United States, have enough money in their endowment from research grants we get from the federal government. They don't need to charge that money, much money for college, okay? So you wouldn't believe the hundreds of millions of dollars that are sitting in research funds at major universities that don't come from kids' tuitions at all. They come from major research grants. And they're just sitting there. But yes, this is what we got. I want the people out there to see that don't see this as a challenge. Don't see this as a disaster. If you've got Aunt Edna and Grandma and Grandpa with you, and you've got your kids, and maybe a couple grandkids, maybe a couple great-grandkids, see it as an opportunity to share. See it as an opportunity to grow. And here comes that old New Testament word. What is it? Koinonia, okay? And that's the fellowship. Focus on the fellowship. What values can bring us together? What belief systems can we share? How do we make the Christian message strong between all of us and make us all get along in love and harmony and then boost a generation for the future?
Indeed. We certainly have, we have so much to learn from other cultures that are multi-generational cultures, and we have so much that we can gain from the circumstances that we, as you said, we can see it as an opportunity where we can build on those circumstances and make the best of them, see them as opportunities to strengthen those relationships within the family so that the important things are passed on from one generation to the next, including of utmost importance, the Word of God and the faith that results from God's Word.
That's correct. The only problem you run into is when you end up with a great-granddaughter who's my granddaughter who liked the Cubs, and everybody else likes the Cardinals. So then you could have some issues going on there. So. But other than that, it's usually okay. You know, usually they all become Blues fans anyway, so it's all right.
Dr. Jack Fiennes, clinical psychologist, thanks so much for being our guest today on His Time.
God's blessings, everybody. Happy May.
Thank you. Happy May to you as well. God's blessings. Coming up in just a little bit, our study of the daily New Testament reading on His Time on Worldwide KFUO.